To order, Committee of Community and Regional Affairs. And there's this one, 39, my golly, doing fine. February 25th, 2004, there is a quorum. We have Senator Elton, Stevens, Wagner, and myself, Senator Stedman's absent, and Senator Lincoln, and today we're going to hear two bills, Senate Joint Resolution and then one bill. We'll start out with the Joint Resolution number 25, and then after that, we'll probably have a brief recess while we take care of the overhead projector and a few things. And then we'll go on and have Senate Bill 328, which concerns some clerical updates on timber revenue sharing. And with that, I would like to go ahead and call Senator Donnie Olson up. He is from District T, and he will go ahead and make a presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, and especially the distinguished delegation that's here from Shishmaref. I'd like to go ahead and give you a brief synopsis of what Senate Joint Resolution 25, which has to do with flooding and erosion control assistance. SJR 25 is a resolution requesting that the Army Corps of Engineers ease their cost and benefit analysis for projects in rural Alaska. I have proposed this resolution in response to many concerns voiced by my constituents with regard to the erosion and flooding problems that plague Western Alaska. Currently, many of the villages in Western Alaska are not receiving the assistance needed for the protection of life and property. On November 8, 2003, a winter storm hit Western Alaska. This storm caused considerable damage to Unalakleet, Shishmaref, and some of Nome's surrounding areas. While the governor has declared a state of disaster because of the storm, the continued efforts of erosion on the villages of Alaska are not going to be resolved by emergency disaster declarations. A more comprehensive, coordinated effort is required by the Army Corps of Engineers and other federal and state agencies. Therefore, I respectfully urge your support for this resolution to focus attention on this very serious problem. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll answer any questions if you have any. As we get ready to have this PowerPoint presentation by the delegation from Shishmaref.
Just 1 second. Let the record show that Senator Lincoln has arrived. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, could you just talk about that, the cost and benefit analysis and what that is, just so we have an understanding of how the Corps determines and what is wrong with how they're determining projects?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, as you look at what the Army Corps of Engineers has required for some of these cost and benefit analysis, what you do is this Corps goes ahead and looks at what it's going to cost to go ahead and remedy a situation. In this particular case, it happens to be erosion. They've been dealing with that for a long period of time. And then they go ahead and see what the cost is and see what it's going to benefit. Now, obviously, in this particular case, where you have a relatively small population, the cost-to-benefit ratio is somewhat out of the ordinary, and the magnitude is something that they're going to raise questions about. And because of that, there is going to be those issues that they are going to find contentious. In the meantime, we've got the island of Shishmaref, the island that Shishmaref is located on, eroding away. They don't take into consideration, you know, the culture and the lifestyle and the social benefits they have of maintaining the integrity of a community such as this that have been there for, you know, as soon as people walked across the land bridge, there were people settling this area because it was a very opportune place to go ahead and hunt, fish, and is a very, you know, has a reindeer herd there and has got a lot of natural resources, just that the because of global warming or whatever other situations are out there, the climatic changes that have happened, the erosion is starting to take place, and so that there's less and less real estate for them to go and have their dwellings and their places on. In essence, it only deals with the structural benefits and cost that goes on. It doesn't deal with, as I alluded to, some of the social issues that we're dealing with.
Senator, any other questions? Senator Olson, then we'll go ahead and have the presentation, and then we'll come back for more questions.
I appreciate that, and we certainly have a professional person that's in charge of this, so. We'll have Tony Wayawana is the head of the coalition, the Erosion Coalition. He is the one in charge of the presentation.
Okay. Our chair for the chair for our coalition is going to give the presentation, and she's Lucy Inningwalk, and our vice chair Kelly Inningwalk. And if she has any questions or anybody has any questions, I'll answer the questions.
Wait, before you leave, could you state your name for the into the microphone so we pick it up for the record?
Okay. My name is Tony Wayawana Sr., the Shishkumar Village Transportation Planner.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Lucy Inungok, Shishma Erosion and Relocation Coalition Chairperson. And on behalf of Shishmaref, we'd like to thank you for allowing us to comment on your SJR 25 resolution. And we've been working on this coalition since 1997, when we had our first major storm. And that's how we formed our coalition. We didn't know. The three entities in Shishmaref were trying to work together. And then we weren't getting anywhere, so we formed the Shishmaref Erosion and Relocation Coalition, made up by the Native Village of Shishmaref, or the IRA Council, City of Shishmaref, and the Shishmaref Native Corporation. And COERC is the nonprofit that facilitates the coalition and provides staff support, like Tony.
Sure.
We have public meetings and community involvement every 2 months or so. We have public meetings to inform our community members of how we are progressing in our erosion and relocation cause. Shishmaref, as you know, is located on a barrier island, and this picture shows more of the island, which is less now.
You said that there's less now. What year was that picture taken? About
95, I think.
Yeah. Before the 97 storm.
The communities, Shishmaref is one of the 18 to 20 communities in the Bering Strait region. And you'll see Shishmaref is the farthest north village in the Bering Strait region. And our mode of our life in Shishmaref, we get around with our Hondas in the springtime when the snow is melting, and we also have access to Shishmaref by small aircrafts. And we have summer transportation mainly by boat, and one of the activities our subsistence is reindeer that we corral. And again, you'll see more photos of how our roads are. We don't really have any real roads. We just use what we can use, a Honda mostly, snow machine. Some people have trucks.
Yes.
I don't know pictures you have further on, but can you tell us where that erosion is? Can you point to where that erosion is starting in any of these pictures? Or you'll have others?
Mm-hmm. We'll be able to show other pictures.
Okay.
A few more times.
In our community, we our people, we celebrate our Christmas activities. Is a week-long activities where we have everyone participate. It starts with foot races, dog team races, and at night we have men's games, men and women game, but mostly they look forward to the traditional men's games. And also we have Some of the activities are held outside, like our foot races and then our dog team races. We have our spring carnival too that is held annually in March or April, depending on the ice conditions. And we have, it's okay. You just see our people celebrating 4th of July. Subsistence. The community is highly dependent on its cultural and traditional heritage, subsisting off the land and sea is a vital component to the daily consumption of natural foods harvested in Chishmah. This is passed down from generation to generation, and preservation of our unique culture is vital to the continued existence of our community as one family, and we want to stress that we are one family. We have photos of the types of subsistence we have, that we use boats and then we catch the seal, and that's the first part of putting it away, and fish, and
most important is our
seal, and then berries. We have meat and fish racks that are down by the ocean side, and every summer or after every storm, we have to move them further in. And these, I think this one has since toppled over after the last storm. We do a lot of our fishing in front of our community and also on the river. And you can see we have muskoxen that were introduced to Shishamaru about 15, 20 years ago. And they're there to stay. And we are plagued by the shoreline erosion. This is the latest photo that we have after the November storm, where erosion occurred to cause a lot of our people to be concerned, because it's going to right in front of our backyard, you know.
Yeah, go ahead. That's fine.
I was up there once, and I'm trying to visualize again. But how close is that now to the houses there for the where your erosion line is cut back?
Can I say something? In the packets that we provided you, there's a map in there. I think it's right after the copies of the PowerPoint presentation, and you'll see measurements taken behind that map. It's here. You'll see there's a line drawn from the last measurements that show how much is eroded since. And then there's the actual measurements on the second side. But you can see there's different points that we've kept records of for measurements. And you can see how different the whole island is being affected. And it's just not, it's severely more affected in different parts of town. But for the most part, the whole island is being affected by erosion. We have the top picture there. That was just in one storm. You see all that land there that's it's sod that's fallen over? That was just in, and that was a silent storm, the early one in November. We had a 2 weeks later another storm that did more damage. And we don't have as great pictures of what happened after that storm because it froze over. But that kind of shows you how much the sod, it's fallen over, eroding rapidly.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow. Have you lost any buildings to the erosion?
That's a problem, and that's a problem that I think Senator Olson is trying to bring about on the table here. The land itself does not have any value for a lot of the programs. We have been able to tug houses, move them out of the way before they're falling over. And so therefore, there's no value to, you know, there's no, what's that? The actual dollar amount value has, we've already fixed the problem, kind of. But the fact is that we don't have anything there, and more homes are being threatened, and we just can't keep moving them back. That's the problem.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer that question more directly. Senator Lincoln, you can see that it's obviously threatening houses, and yes, there have been houses that have gone over. Now, there's been a prioritization that those houses that have been moved have had some type of either housing project or some type of monies that are allowed to relocate them. But surely some of the older dwellings because of that have gone into the sea and been swallowed up. But also I want to point out that if you look at the top picture up here, you can see that it's threatening their petroleum supply there. And whenever you get an erosion, that is, you can see where it apparently was before, this in one or two storms, you're starting to see these bulk tanks being threatened, which is a very much a threat to the community, a threat to the environment, and all those issues that need to be addressed.
Tony just mentioned, brought to my attention, I wasn't sure exact numbers, but we've moved 18 homes from the other side of town, right at the brink of time kind of thing, and one or two have fallen over, and they're older structures that nobody lived in at that time, so.
One family was living,
okay. Okay, so.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
This is in front of our school. This was originally our our grade school when it first was built, and now it's a teacher housing. And this building is being really severely threatened now. It's all sand there, and the only thing that's holding it together is permafrost. And our permafrost is melting too.
Mr. Chair? Can I just point out one thing? You see the playground or somewhat of a playground there? That's gone. These are pictures from 02. And I don't know if you had read any of the articles in the Daily News, but most recently, during the last storm in November, this building was evacuated. We have, I think, 4 teacher families that live in that building, and it's nearly up to their door. I would guess, is it 8 feet from the... 10 feet from the building itself. The erosion has come back that way.
Senator Stevens has a question. Is there a major change that's causing this, a climactic change? Is it warming or what? Do you know what's behind this?
We believe so, yeah.
And it's affecting not just you, but several other communities as well.
In recent times, even in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of change in the weather, kind of, and when things freeze over. This last year in November, we had a major storm, and even in my lifetime, it would have froze over early October, but it was still open water, and we didn't have that protective ice in November. See, we get through to October, like, okay, good, we've survived this one. And then this year, it was just strange for it to have the ice pack not protecting us in November.
So there's
definitely change in climate that we're seeing, and in my lifetime I've seen.
So no expectation, and Kelly, that things are going to improve in terms of the long-term conditions, that it'll probably continue to deteriorate, if not get worse.
Yeah, I think that's agreeable. And you have to understand that all the bluff is sand, and the only thing holding it together is a permafrost. And when you get that wave action up there, it's accelerating the erosion because you melt the permafrost and the bluff fails. So that's what's happening. So. You'll see that.
This is the bluff that will be taken care of by the Corps. Right. Tony?
Mr. Chairman, give you an example of the bluff failure. This section in 2002, which was undercut, was like undercut 14 feet back, and when the bluff fell in, it was a 102-foot section that fell in all at once. So that's the photo of the guy taking measurements.
So that, is that power lines running right up there?
Mm-hmm.
So you've already moved those?
Well, those,
back.
I don't think you have those been moved.
They've been rerouted a couple months ago. So.
In this last storm in November, we were concerned that there was one power line towards this end of town that might have been threatening our power for the whole community. Mm-hmm. We came to the point where at that last storm, we might have been out of power. And had to. I think we've moved, or we're looking at moving that power pole. I can't remember. I don't know if it was done or not yet. Will be moved. And I don't know if that's the right one, or this is the other photo.
This is the October 2002 storm that was taken at 12 noon and then a couple hours later. You can see how the storm just worked on the shoreline.
This is at the, Mr. Chairman, I just want to note again in these photos, this is at the end of town where a lot of homes have been moved. Those homes on the far right have been moved, mm-hmm. and those were tugged away again at the last minute, and so no value was placed in homes, and we couldn't get the disaster declaration, for example, and qualify for other programs that would have assisted us in providing protection and that sort of thing. So that's just like right at the edge there, those homes are moved.
This is the road to the dump, and you can see the lights over there. That's the where the airstrip is. And
to give you an idea of where the airstrip is, you see how close the road is to the airport. Once you get over to the airport. The airport, if you look at this picture, it would just be right on the other side of the road. And it gives you an idea of how close our airport is to the ocean. This was taken a day after the storm in November, so once the storm starts subsiding and the slush build up on the ocean starts real fast, like overnight.
To give, make sure everybody understands the airport runs right here and ends right here, so you can see how close it's threatening the airport, which is made up of asphalt because of the sand situation that they've got themselves in.
Does it work? oh yeah, there it goes. This is before it got bad. So you'll see in the photos how the wave comes up and hits the bluff, and you'll see in a bit here that the bluff failure. It cuts underneath and breaks it away. That on the, that's a school teacher housing, teacher quarters. See, it's right behind.
This was just last.
This is at November, yes.
And you'll see the China wall on the back.
It was kind of a panic because we, on the other side, this is on the lagoon side of the island, and with the wind coming up, there was a bunch of, maybe Tony could explain it better than I can, the ice built up on the edge, and was there's we park our boats for the winter storage up there, so they had to go in and yank the boats out, otherwise they would have been destroyed. And there were several boats that actually floated away.
This is the marine head here, just so you're familiar with me. It's threatening.
That's right below my house.
I want you to use
the
pool.
The marine head, that you plug in your barge, fuel barge comes on and plugs on into that and fills your bulk tanks. You can obviously see that houses have been lost.
That's the map that you have.
So where on this one would the bulk tanks for the town be?
Could use the pointer.
Okay. 9 and 10.
The bulk tanks for the town right here.
Yeah. Okay. The red ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the bulk tanks that you see the fuel header on the videotape. That was this one here, but we've had those bulk tanks replaced by Denali Commission, and they're now over here. And the rest of the bulk tanks were community, right in this area here. And most of the footage that you see on there with all the erosion going on is right in this area here. And it continues down to here. I don't think it shows on here, but where I can't see it, but in your printed packet, you'll see a printed line, that one solid black line that kind of goes in and out like this and over here, and that's where the estimated edge of the current beach is as compared to here. This one, the blue line, is the estimated edge from the 97 storm, so the other one that we added was the after the 2003 storm. And the school building is here, the teacher's quarters, the whole school is here from kindergarten to 12th grade. Our washateria is here, and then tannery is here. During the November storm, the water breached up just behind these homes here all the way over. And then out to the back where you see all the pressure ridges, that was over here when the high water came, and before the wind shifted, and the high water came all the way up in this low-lying area.
Did it cover the runway?
The runway?
Did it cover the runway?
No, it didn't cover the runway, but on the south side, from this point on, it went right alongside of the runway over. So, if not for the dump road stopping the wave action, we probably would have had the water going all the way up to the runway on the north side.
Is it just photos?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
We'll go back to one more. During the November storm in the teacher's housing, we had to evacuate three families of teachers, and then in the other area of town, we had to evacuate another local family from their homes during that storm. So there was a total of four families relocated to other homes within the community during the storm.
Senator Wright?
Just a quick question for reference. I see some areas outlined here in the study. I haven't had time to go through in great deal of detail. But do you have a map in here in this book, or you have anything you show us as to the location on the barrier island now and where you're proposing to relocate it, all in one, so we can see the total scope of the distance and everything?
I'm not sure which page it's on, but it should show something in the NRCS report.
Page 5 is...
Page 13 show that? Is it? There's a... I don't know if that's where the current village is now. I don't think so. That's right.
I don't know where Shishmaref is in that one. Shows the...
I don't know if you want to pass this around.
Okay, Shishmaref is here, and then on the NRCS report, you see Kin Creek. It's directly south, so it's inland, like about 3 miles
inland on Kin Creek. So Shishmaref is
across the bay on Barrier Island.
Okay. Barrier Island's across the mouth of that bay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then how far inland are you proposing to go?
It's approximately almost 13 miles in from the community, so it's 10 miles across, almost 3 miles inland.
And then, Mr. Chairman, then how far in from the edge of the bay, I guess is what I should say, from the shore of the bay?
But almost 3 miles from the edge of the bay.
Okay.
Senator Earl. Thanks, Mr. Chair. How does that relocation site, I mean, how do you deliver fuel to the village then?
this coming summer, NRCS is going to continue on with its studies of exactly where to put the storage facilities, how much fuel are we going to need for the homes, which way exactly the road is going to go to the gravel site, and you know, how exactly to deliver the fuel.
Will you be able to get a fuel barge inside the barrier islands then, or?
We should be able to. Part of the study, again, as I said, they're going to do more in-depth studies, including sounding. Is that what you call that? Sounding of the lagoon to try to figure out where best to put the port or the causeway for fuel delivery and everything else.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson. Chairman, I should elaborate. There is a river that comes on down that has a channel to it, and that's the plan, is to use the channel to bring the fuel barges up to connect them to the marine head, and then puts the pipeline up onto the boat.
Okay.
So actually,
great. Thanks. Senator. Just a little follow-up. Do you then expect that eventually that barrier reef, the barrier islands, will eventually be gone, and there'll be no protection from this little bay where you're going to locate, there's be nothing in front? Is that what you expect to happen?
I think if you look at some of the places that are down there, having flown between Wales and Shishmaref and the Wales up to Espenberg, there is a shallow shoal out there, so it does break the waves before they come in, because it's the wave action, as was pointed out by Tom, that it's the wave action that tends to do all the erosion. You've got ice there that stops the wave action, then you're much more protected. Once you get something to break that wave action, that's what is going to protect it from in the future.
Mr. Chairman, here's an example of some of the government agencies that has provided assistance to Shishmaref. We've been working with the USDA NRCS agency for the past 3 years in helping the community select a site for relocation and to look at other things concerning our current erosion. We've been working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We have a current Section 14 request with them to provide beachfront protection in front of the teacher's quarters, which would cover the whole section of the school property, approximately 250 feet wide section they're proposing to put in riprap. We're currently trying to, within this, request a match for the school district since they're the sponsors. They're also working with a travel partnership program grant that we've gotten through Senator Stevens in assessing the current erosion and the future relocation for the community. That project is underway, and under that project, we've gotten $1 million to do that assessment. Different types of assistance from Division of Emergency Services, providing temporary protection and other things in the past few years, since 97. FEMA. In the past, we've gotten assistance from them to construct a 350-foot gabion seawall and to move 13 homes through FEMA after 97. Alaska Community Economic Development, I can't remember what we did with them, but they helped provide technical assistance to receive assistance from FEMA. We put in a request for the National Guard IRT program, and since the community has selected a site, where our next step is to help or to develop a work plan, so that we can start proposing the projects for the IRT program. And they're willing to provide assistance when we decide what exactly we want from them. Housing Authority, They help provide funding to relocate some of the homes in Shishmaref. We've relocated a total of 18 homes, and some of those homes were funded for the move was through the HUD program. Denali Commission, support from them to replace the bulk tanks in the center of the community that were threatened by erosion to another part of the community. And there's a few other things that we've done, but those are the main things.
Our request for state assistance is twofold. Our immediate goal is to provide erosion protection measures at our current site. Our longer-term goal is to relocate the community. Let's see. First of all, I wanted to say that we support and I'm glad to hear that Senator Olson has proposed the bill, because this is something definitely that will help us, assist us in the way of making things move out in Shishmaref and other erosion and flooded flooding-affected communities. First of all, I wanted to talk about the school property. You've seen pictures of the school. We just had a major renovation done on the school, and you've seen pictures of the school teachers' quarters in the pictures that we showed a while ago. That area right behind it sits the school. We just did a major renovation on the school, and I think what was it, up and around, I don't know what the cost of $10 million state funded. We have gotten authorization from the Corps of Engineers for a Section 14 project that would sit right in front of the school property to protect that area. But our holdup here is the local match. We've been told that the local match can be up to $400,000. We just don't have local money to provide the local match. And we're requesting for a state assistant to request to the federal government that they waive the local match for the Section 14 project, making it 100% federal. Or we urge you to support us in the request for the Corps of Engineers to consider the Corps Transportation Project that starts from, I wish I had a map to show you, the Corps Transportation Project that's doing a riprap seawall from one part of town as a local match, or that the state authorized funds to provide the local match. And like I said, it's the for the local match, and it could be up to $400,000. The core Section 14 project has a $1 million cap. And
interesting. Just a question, Kelly. I'm probably misunderstanding this, but does it make any sense to do a Band-Aid temporary fix when, in fact, the long-term fix is the removal of the village and moving it someplace else? I mean, is it just money that we're sort of losing and not getting anywhere if we do a temporary, like you were talking about, you're putting riprap out there? And I just need to know from you, is that a wise thing when, in fact, the ultimate solution is probably to relocate the village?
The fact of the situation here is that we're not going to move tomorrow. We're not even going to move in 5 years. We need to protect the island where we're at now while we move, while we plan to relocate. This last storm was so severe that a lot of people were out in Shishmaref wondering, what are we going to do? How are we going to evacuate everybody? It was really scary. And as you've seen in the pictures, it's right on people's doorsteps. My house was severely affected in this last storm, and I'm about a good 50, 60 feet from the edge. But the water was coming over the edge and coming about, I would guess, 15 feet from my doorstep. And that's the situation throughout the whole island, the whole community.
Mm-hmm. Senator Allen?
I may have missed this, and if so, I apologize. But you said the match component that is needed is $400,000. Mm-hmm. How much federal money does that bring?
$750,000. It's $1 million. It's capped at $1 million for the Section 14 project. But I want to also mention that this is only for the school property. This is 230, up to 330 feet in front of the school property. Section 14 projects are limited to public facilities. And this is one thing that's been authorized, but we've got to hold up here with that match.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to elaborate a little bit on Representative Stevens' comment, or Senator Stevens, sorry.
Well, my question, I mean, and you did a good job of answering, Kelly, but I guess the question, bluntly, is are we putting good money after bad, or, you know, are we wasting money in trying to protect a situation which is not going to be the solution in any event, and we have to eventually move the village? But what you're saying is that you really need to do both because it takes too long to remove the village to another point. I guess, that, Tony, that's the question I was asking. Does it make sense? And it sounds like what Kelly is saying is it does make sense.
To give you an example of temporary band-aid fixes, you know, like ADS has done in the past, the single-line gabions or the double-line gabions, you know, that they've done in the past, they've almost always lasted only one storm. One of the comments that the Corps made is that even though the riprap project is designed for a 25-year lifespan, it might only last only 10 years because of the rise in the sea level. So, in our opinion, a band-aid fix we don't think would last for Shishmaref while we were trying to plan for the relocation of our community to a safe place on the mainland.
Thank you.
In short, it's the band-aid fix is a lot more expensive in the long run. We've looked at with the Cork Transportation Project and the Section 14 Project to put something a little bit more stable with the riprap. And we think that will be the best cost-effective solution.
Senator Wagner.
How many people live in Shishmaref right now?
Over 600. Sorry? About 600 plus minus. Like we mentioned a while ago, the Cork Transportation Project is going to be beginning this March, next month actually, and it's a riprap seawall to protect the main road. We're using BIA IRR Transportation Roads Funds, and we're using it to put the seawall, riprap seawall, to protect the main road to the airport. And the equipment's mobilized, we're ready to go. Besides the Cork Transportation Project and the Section 14 Project of the Corps of Engineers, we need erosion protection in other areas of the town. A large majority of the town, like we mentioned and you had asked, is being affected by erosion. A lot of it is residential area. We are requesting assistance to provide protection for other areas with nothing in place. And from in the picture that you see there on the right is basically, you see this large building, that's a school teacher's quarters, and on down this way, it has nothing there. We have local material, reusable armor flex. The box in the left-hand picture, that's a previous seawall attempt, and that was done in the 80s, I believe. And we also have gabions available from previously constructed and failed seawalls that we think that in order to make it cost-effective, efficient, quick fix in the other areas. If we can't put rip-off seawall all across the island, that this is our next kind of the second best choice to reuse that material to provide some protection on the areas that don't have anything. So that's that. Like I said, the relocation is our longer-term goal. It's not going to happen anytime soon. We need to provide erosion protection measures now in order to protect the community. But relocation is our ultimate solution. We, as a community, voted to relocate, and overwhelmingly it was supported. We have some additional requests that maybe we could entertain here, that we'd like you to entertain. First of all, request for the federal government to enact special measures to ensure Alaska villages qualify and receive federal assistance in for erosion and protection and relocation. Essentially, what Senator Olson's resolution is asking. As you know, there's no coordinated effort between, there's no one single agency that exists to help villages and other communities that have erosion and relocation flooding issues. There's nothing out there. We need a coordinated effort. It's a big task, and it's going to mean a lot of pieces working together. I don't know if you're familiar or if you've seen the GAO report on Alaska erosion-affected and flooding communities. That was the suggestion that the GAO recommended. And we are asking that FEMA be the agency to take the lead, because they are in an emergency situation, and the immediacy of the situation in Shishmaref and along with other coastal villages, they seem to be best equipped to deal with such a situation. Sometimes our impression and of FEMA is that it's a more of an emergency agency that could deal with things quick, and that's what we need. We can't be held up in regulation and 10 years down the road, you know, make things move. And some of the agencies are set up that way, a way to react quickly. So the other request that we have is that we ask your support to request and urge the federal government to enact legislation that establishes as a demonstration project for both erosion and relocation assistance. There are many, many communities that have the same issues that we're having, and in order to provide example for the rest of the state of Alaska, we're asking that Shishmaref kind of be a pilot project, the guinea pig, to show the how we could do it for the rest of the Alaska. We also ask that this request that various state agencies are fully involved and engaged in establishing the new community at a relocated site, and ask for support from the state's respective departments to provide technical assistance and funding for the establishment of the new site. So, that's the complete list of our requests. Quickly, I'm sorry to take a lot of your time here.
Okay, well, thank you for the presentation. Do we have any questions before we turn it over to the questions on the phones? Okay, Senator Stevens.
I think I've seen a document that I think shows that there are, 150 to 200 communities that are facing erosion problems, and several in the area that I represent on Kodiak Island as well. I think there are two or three of them there. Of course, I believe that the four communities that you, that are specifically mentioned in here are the four that have the most immediate threat, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, it makes sense to me. What we're asking is the federal government to ease their restrictions. And now you've been working with Senator Stevens, or someone has, and I know it's high on his priority because this report came out. I'm not sure where the report came from, but I think it was from Senator Stevens' office.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was.
So those requests, I mean, you're just asking for us to support the requests that have been going through the Corps and through Senator Stevens, right?
Yeah. And then some additional things that we had mentioned in the presentation, yes. But basically for the states to support the requests that we have for the federal government to lax regulation and everything else that I mentioned.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Tony.
To give you an example, like a Section 14 project where we have with the Corps, it requires a 35% match. And that's for $1 million project. So for the match, we need at least $350,000 to $400,000. And in the communities in the bush, like our community, we're an area where we have no economic development, no tax base, you know. And like the city total budget for the year is like $400,000, you know, the IRAs are similar, you know, communities all over Alaska can't afford to provide the matching requirements, not only for the core project, but other federal programs or agencies such as USDA and other kind of projects, other than to turn to the state or request
Okay, well, Senator Stevens has a question.
Just to follow up on that, and I really, really appreciate what you're saying. We might as well get to the really bad news. I mean, how, do you have any estimates what we're talking about in terms of money? How many millions of dollars will it take to really relocate? How many millions will it take to stop the further deterioration of the village? Do you know that amount? And I'm not sure that it's anything that we need to deal with, but I am curious.
real basic estimates. There hasn't been estimates for Shishmaref, but we could take Kivalina, for example, which is, I think they've estimated $100 million to move the community.
$110
million for Kivalina to relocate their community.
And the number of people there is?
$110 million? Okay. Just making sure I'm hearing correctly.
Okay.
Okay, I would say, might as well get to the really bad news to start with so we know what we're talking about. Yeah. And then the temporary fix, do we know an estimate on that cost? Is that
we are estimating, like I said, we've got pieces of it being done. Pieces, and we've got the Cork Transportation Project, and we've got the Section 14. We've got one big chunk of the area of the community that is free, I would guess, 1,000 feet. And then we have, later down the road, another Section 14 for the Washoe area. The section that we don't have any funds for, I think we're looking at, $4 million to provide protection. But like I said, and we have equipment out there and mobilized and ready that will cut costs. We have reusable material that will cut costs. So those are.
Thank you.
Senator Elton, you had a question?
Well, I kind of a half question,
sure.
Mr. Chair.
That's fine.
And I decided I'd ask it before people come on to testify, and so that the sponsor of the resolution can think about it also. But I was wondering if the sponsor of the resolution, given the comments that were made by the delegation from Shishmaref on the next to last slide, where they requested that the federal government enact special measures to ensure Alaska villages qualify for and receive federal assistance, that maybe there could we could consider an additional resolve that read something like, be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature requests that the federal government enact special measures to ensure Alaska villages qualify for and receive federal assistance for erosion protection and relocation, and that a coordinated effort between the federal and state agencies be led by FEMA, and then add to the notification section FEMA. Just kind of a suggestion, because I mean, I think that was maybe one of the core things from the presentation, that not only do you need assistance, but you need it provided in a way that is coordinated. And I don't know if the sponsor is comfortable with FEMA as the lead agency, but I'm just tossing that out so that if people have a reaction to it during public testimony, they can react to it.
Well, we'll let Senator Holson chew on that one while we go to public testimony from the phones. How's that? Okay. We have two Alaska citizens today that have dialed in. Hopefully they're still there. We'll start out with Julie Baltar from Kuurkuk. Work? Are you still there, Julie?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead and start your testimony.
Okay, I am Julianne Baltar. I am director of Kuurk's transportation program. Kuurk is the regional nonprofit corporation up here in the Bering Straits region. And Tony is one of our employees providing assistance out there at Shishmaref. I just wanted to say that Kuurk concurs with Senator Olson's resolution number 25 and would also endorse the recommendation for a resolution that is based on what Shishmaref has provided there. We have had direct interaction with NRCS, not as much with FEMA, but we've also had direct interaction with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And if anything, I were to make an observation, the United States Army Corps of Engineers is not in a position to respond to an emergency. We've been working with them now for over 3.5 years, and they have extremely cumbersome regulations and policies that make it almost impossible to make anything move forward. Back in, I believe it was around February of 2002, U.S. Senator Ted Stevens has been able to get about $1 million into core appropriations to provide assistance to Shishmaref. It was meant to be for an expedited EIS. At this time, the Corps has just determined how they could expend those funds. And we really haven't seen any action on that at this time. They are supposed to be meeting with Shishmaref to discuss how these $1 million of planning funds could be used. But it's taken essentially a full year and a half for them to even do anything. And in the situation that Shishmaref has, that kind of slow and inability to respond is devastating. And so we believe that FEMA, if there were to be a joint agency response to what's going on in Alaska Native Villages, we believe that FEMA is better positioned to be able to respond to an emergency. They tend to be able to turn around and respond much quicker. In addition, members of the Shishmaref Coalition met with Senator Mikulski and Stevens back in January, and at that meeting it was suggested that Senator Mikulski's staff and Senator Stevens' staff would try to get a very high-level multi-agency meeting going on in Washington, D.C. We're still waiting for that date to be set, but it is our expectation that the results of that meeting will provide a tremendous benefit to all of us working with erosion on how the federal government should respond. The situation at Shishmaref is very, very dire. It's a community that's essentially established on sand. The permafrost is being undermined by the warmer temperatures, and essentially the village is crumbling out from underneath them. They have plans and would like to relocate by the year 2009. That's their current proposal. But the rate of erosion that we have out there right now, there will be no village left to move unless some kind of more permanent erosion measures are put in place. So anyway, those are just briefly my comments, and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Julie. Do we have any questions? Senator Lincoln.
It might be of the sponsor, too. I'm sorry the folks had to leave, but otherwise I would have asked this of them. But it seems to me that part of the problem, Senator Olson, is, or the major problem, is that perhaps Cork Online can answer it as well, but if you just let those houses fall in and not try to move them, then it seems to me that the federal government, through the emergency disaster, then would respond to it, rather than, as was testified, that it's just land, that it's not. But folks are concerned about the buildings, but also trying to save dollars, too, by pulling those houses back out of the way. If they just let them fall into the ocean, then the federal government would come forth and help in a disaster. But that's not what the folks are asking, and it doesn't make sense to me that the community is really trying and yet the federal government can't help under the regulations that they've got now. So I agree with the approach that the resolution and perhaps an amendment would do, but is there any discussion in D.C. that you know of, either Senator Olson or Cork on the line, to remedy that situation? Because it's cost effective to take care of the problem now.
I can respond, Mr. Chairman. First of all, let me apologize that the delegation from Shishmaref had another calling, and because of a scheduling difficulty, and had to leave early. So I'll stay here to go and answer questions. As far as what's going on up in Shishmaref, I think Shishmaref is an epitome of how coordinated and how well these three entities are working together between the city, the Native Corporation, and the IRA. Obviously, Shishmaref illustrates the extreme problems that villages in Bush, Alaska can encounter with erosion. The other three are Nutak, Kivalina, and Koyukuk. But as far as addressing the question that Senator Lincoln has, maybe Judy Baltar has a better idea of what's going on there in Washington, D.C.
Thank you.
Can I just follow
Senator
up with
Lincoln,
another
please.
Quick question? Yes. That, Judy, I wished I had the statement that Senator Stevens made to the joint House and Senate, but he spoke about erosion being a real concern of his and addressing that. Do you know if his addressing it means to change some of the regulations that are on the books now?
I believe that that is what he is looking at. And if I may make one other comment, because of the Corps of Engineers' extremely burdensome process, we believe their process itself adds millions of dollars to the cost estimates for these projects. And that needs to be taken into consideration. We believe that a village can be moved at a much lower cost than it's currently projected.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for? Okay, thank you, Julie. I'm sorry I had trouble pronouncing the company. Kawarik, correct?
Kawarik, yes.
Kawarik, okay. I'll get these pronunciations down from out west. I can do pretty good on the southeast stuff. Okay, with that, we'd like to go to the next citizen that's called in, Bart Ionoff, and he's from...
I'm with the Native Village of Yulonkli.
Okay.
And I want to concur with the statements that were made by Shishmaref as well as Kawarik. We were involved in some of the discussions with the General Accounting Office, and I think it's really significant what they found. Out of the 213 villages in Alaska, 184 are impacted by flooding and erosion. There's four villages that are an imminent threat. Again, the Shishmaref, Nutak, Kivalina, and Koyukuk. So the question I've got is, what's down the store for the villages that are near the coast or along the river systems? Global warming is occurring, and I'm just wondering, without the changes to the cost benefit, you know, where our villages will be in the next 10, 20 years. So we've been pushing for some changes with the federal cost benefit policy because we felt, for the most part, our villages, our remote villages, don't have the economies of scale, and we don't have the population base to justify the Corps of Engineers spending a dollar in our community, as we won't have a dollar in return. So there's a real need to relax, to provide some exemption for Alaska based on the location. You look at mobilization, demobilization costs, and it's really hurting our chances of landing these projects. And it's basic infrastructure we're talking about here, and that's the concern. Without basic infrastructure, we're not going to see economic development, and it's something we're in dire need of. We speak in support of SJR 25, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling in, and thank you, Bart and Julie, both, for staying on the line for an hour to get your testimony, and we appreciate that when the citizens are patient with us so everybody has an opportunity to speak. With that, I'd like to go ahead and bring it back to the committee and ask for any further questions. Seeing none, is there any changes that you might want to, or verbiage changes or anything that you may want to consider, Senator Olson, or you want us to go ahead and take the issue at hand?
If it's the will of the committee, and there certainly has been a good recommendation there, we'll be looking at that. We can change it down the way.
Okay. Yes.
Senator Lecter. If you're ready, I would make a motion that SJR 25 move out of committee with individual recommendations.
Do we have any objections?
Attach the zero fiscal note.
Yes, and we'll attach the zero fiscal note. With that, it will move out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm not going to shake. I've been sneezing. You don't want to touch me.
Well, why don't you sit someplace else?
Doctor, you don't want to touch me. Oh, by the way, thanks, Ro.
Get out of here. So you wouldn't pass it on to a fellow minority member?
I would have pulled my hand back.
We are going to go on down the agenda to the last item at hand, and it is Senate Bill number 328, sponsored by Senator Stedman. It's an act relating to the National Forest Income Program and the Department of Community and Economic Development, and the authority of the department to adopt regulations making conforming amendments and providing for an effective date. And if I could stay here and chair the meeting, and bring forward from my staff, Mr. Dick Coos, who is amply prepared and duly qualified to present this presentation today.
Otherwise, he shall be fired, right?
No, we don't do that in our office. But,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dick Coos with Senator Stedman's staff. And briefly, historically, the distribution of national forest receipts was under this program was done under a 1908 Act, and where 25% of the income from the forest was distributed to the counties, the boroughs, the cities, and the rural-type school districts. And with the passage of the, I got to read this one, Secure Rural Schools Community Self-Determination Act of 2000, the National Forest Receipts Program for the state changed a little bit in the fact that for the years 2002 to 2007, it's going to be based upon an average of the high 3 years in the state during the period of 1987 to 2000. The payments to the state under the Secure Rural Schools Act is stabilized for that period of 2002 to 2007. Rather than fluctuate the way it had been and dropping rather significantly due mainly to the reduction in timber sales on the national forest. The distribution of to the boroughs, the cities, and the rural education attendance areas changed only in the fact that the new federal act required a 15% to 20% special projects out of that money and the balance of it to be spent on the traditional schools and roads type things. Special projects are defined in the Act. SB 328 allows the Department of Community and Economic Development to prepare the regulations that reflect this distribution and the accounting of the special projects and make some technical corrections to the regulations. And with that, I would answer questions, or we have with us a department representative that can also answer questions.
We have absolute confidence in Mr. Coos. We'll be able to field most anything we throw at him. Senator Alton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coos, I mean, you mentioned that special projects are defined in the Act. Are these special projects that are accomplished by schools, are accomplished by the department, are accomplished by the feds? I mean, what kind of special projects are we talking about?
Senator Alton, through the chair, special projects entail two types of projects. One is the Title II and two is Title III. Title II is accomplished by the Forest Service using a resource advisory committee. And the type, I could go into the types also, but Title III are controlled by the borough or the local entity through their local elected body. And so there's choices made by the elected body as to whether it's controlled by the Forest Service and done by them or done by the local government.
Yes, just to make sure I understand, so this is a new distribution of those timber resources. Schools or?
Through Senator Elvin, through the chair, that's true. It used to be 100% went to the local entities for schools and roads. As a result of the negotiations in D.C. on the new act, 15% was directed of the total to be done on these special projects. There's one short limitation to it. Anybody that receives less than $100,000 doesn't have to do the 15%.
So just to make sure I understand, now the only guarantee for schools and roads is 85%, 15% to be determined either by the Forest Service or by the local elected
officials. That's true.
We have other questions for Mr. Coos. Senator Lincoln.
I do, but I don't know what I'm asking. This is a question that came from a community. And the question is, what is the federal community development quota program and how does it relate to the forest receipts program?
Senator Lincoln, through the chair, it does not relate to it. The community development part of the act of the SB 328 here relates to technical changes that there was a change up in one section of an A, and so it had to be technically conformed throughout the rest of the act. It has nothing to do with the National Forest Receipts.
The other question that came in was, does this bill give the state authority to charge administrative costs to the Forest Receipts Program over which they charge now?
Senator Lincoln, through the chair, not to my knowledge. That was a question I had too, and the department person would have to answer it, but there is no change in any administrative costs that were charged before, if there were any.
So somebody is online that might
I'd have
further
to defer in. To Mr. Ralstead to answer that question.
And he enthusiastically come forward and answer that question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask one
more. He won't go away.
I didn't think he would. But the other question that I've got is when, you know, we look at this and it's to secure rural schools and community self-determination act of 2000, and we're going from now 100% to 85% for education and or schools and roads, right?
Yes.
I always get a little bit concerned when my colleague from the other side of the aisle is constantly asking, well, what do we contribute in the rural areas towards schools? And I don't want to have us erode any further funding that could go to schools and then have to defend that again later, that it's not 100%, and this is, you know, we're not contributing more to the schools and therefore we have to go a different direction. So can you help me to respond to the good?
Let me elaborate on that, Mr. Coos.
Senator Lincoln, through the chair. The positive thing about the Secure Rural Schools Act is it stabilized it at a higher level than what we were getting the last, say, 6 or 8 years, because it was going down. And I'll give an example from the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, which is where I live. The last few years, we were receiving $100,000 roughly from forest receipts. The new act brought us up to $400,000. So it may have cost us as a local community 15%, but we gained. So I think we are, if that answers the question, we are gaining from the act in itself, but the federal law requires us to put 15% in these special projects.
Mm-hmm. If, yes, if right. On the same subject, though, that
would you have been able to, under that new act of the using Ketchikan as the example of the 400,000, would you have been able to utilize the full 400,000 for schools and roads versus whatever 85% is of that?
Yes.
So,
Chair, yes.
So you really lose 15% from this point on?
All I can say is that that's one perspective, through the chair, one's perspective of looking at it. Yes, we lose 15% or $60,000 a year that could have gone to schools, and it all goes to schools in Ketchikan, I know.
Big brother mandates, I guess is one way of putting it. We have any other questions? Okay, no more questions. Do we have anybody from the audience would like to speak to this issue? I don't think we have anybody on the phones. Okay. Senator,
ready for a motion?
Yes, ready for a motion.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, hold it. What?
Before you make your motion, I think I wanted to hear the response.
Oh, okay, sir.
Because you said he wasn't going away.
Okay, come forward, please. Sit down there by Mr. Koo. State your name, who you represent, and...
Hey, my name is Bill Rolfson. I work for the Department of Community and Economic Development, and I administer the National Forest Receipt Program. Would you like me to respond?
Yes, I would.
Okay. Senator Lincoln, through the chair. As the federal legislation back in 2000, to move away from basically severing the tie between timber harvesting and the income derived from that and sharing that with the local communities for schools and roads, to go to this guarantee and much higher payments for these communities, there was a trade-off, or I guess compromise at the federal level, and that's where the 15% was plugged in. And they're basically for stewardship type projects on federal lands. And for Senator Elton, the city and borough of Juneau, they're 15%. They've been setting that aside annually. One of the eligible special projects is a search and rescue on federal land. So they've been setting their money aside for the helipad on the hospital as part of funding that project for the hospital rescues that occur on the federal land surrounding Juneau.
Senator Lincoln.
But if the community so desired, could they use that 15% for schools or for education?
Senator Lincoln, through the chair, there is one category under the special projects that calls for after-school forest-related education opportunities, and several of the school districts, particularly the REAA, Southeast Island REA, does use their special project money for after-school-related education activities.
The 15%, now there's some flexibility from year to year in that, correct? They can respond to different projects they want to work on?
Right, Senator.
Elaborate on that a little bit as far as...
Chairman Stedman. Annually, we ask each of the boroughs and the communities, they have an option of going 15 up to 20%, how much they'd like to set aside for these special projects. So far, all the entities have selected the minimum amount, 15%. And there is a lot of flexibility in those projects. The city and borough of Sitka is using their money for search and rescue activities as well. So we provide them with a list, and they can change that from annually those projects. But again, it's a requirement at the federal level that we're just implementing here at the state level.
Yeah.
Well, I had a different question. I don't know if there's follow-up to that particular one. But
yeah, let me go to Senator Stevens, but then I'll come back.
In terms of education, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if I'm following you on this, but does this amount of money that goes from this forest income to the communities for education, does that then become tied in with the cap that boroughs have to fund education? Does that then reduce the amount of monies that they can put in from the local community, or does it add to it?
The Chair, Senator Stevens, it adds to that, their total. It has no impact on the state financial aid or the federal aid.
So a local community can put in its cap, and then this adds additional monies to education. Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Well, I had another question, but I'd like to follow up on that, Mr. Sure. Chair. I thought that the timber receipts money, it doesn't go into the foundation formula?
No, it doesn't.
It goes straight to the districts, and then is... Are foundation formula dollars subtracted from the districts then to reflect the receipt of those dollars?
Senator Elton, to my knowledge, it is not offset in any way a local aid for school districts.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to follow up on that, because my understanding is that this reduces kind of the bite on our foundation formula, the receipt of those timber the timber receipts, and that has always been one of Senator Lincoln alluded to it earlier, seen as a local contribution from those rural schools to the payment of the education. So I think we need to follow up on that. But I had another question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
It's a follow-up on how we use the special receipts. I mean, when the local component of the 15%, how do you determine who decides what's done? I mean, in Juneau, we have the school district, we have the borough. In Ketchikan, for example, you have three entities. You've got the city, the borough, and the school district. Who determines the use of the local share of that 15%? Or is it a joint effort?
The Chair, Senator Elton, the Title III funds go directly to the borough, which is what the City and Borough of Juneau has chosen. It'd be ultimately up to the Borough Assembly to determine how to spend those funds.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lincoln.
It was back to the question that, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. The expert here turned over to you, and that was the question from the community is, does this bill give the state authority to charge administrative costs to the force receipts program over what they charge now?
To the Chair, Senator Lincoln, we do not charge any administrative expense against the program, and I believe we submitted a zero fiscal note as well, so there would be no administrative costs associated with this. We pass through every penny through to the communities.
Do you have any other questions? So I guess we have an option here. Senator Hilton, do you want us to hold this up to answer that one question, or do you want us to take action on it and go ahead and get the question answered?
Mr. Chair, this is going on to finance. What I'll do is I'll ask my staff member, who used to be special assistant on education and used to be staff to the State Board of Education, to see if we can't clarify it, and then I'll make sure that we get a memo to you and the other members of the committee. But I don't have any problem with moving it forward.
Okay, that sounds fine.
Yes, and then if you're ready to move the bill.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 238 with the individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay. Do we have objections? Hearing no objections, we'll go ahead and move the bill forward to finance, and Senator Elton will respond back to us with a memo. With that, I will notify the other senators when our next meeting will be and what the agenda item will be. Meeting adjourned.